Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and wherever you are in the world, welcome to Business Travel on the Fly. I'm Emma Woodhouse. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about sustainability in the meetings and events space. We have three incredible guests joining us, each bringing their unique perspective on how we make gatherings more eco-friendly and socially responsible. And also we'll discuss what the future looks like for sustainability in this space. So without further ado, our first guest is Kit Aspen, a climate tech entrepreneur and founder of Thrust Carbon, a carbon intelligence platform that recently launched an amazing calculator specifically for the meetings and events sector. Welcome, Kit.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me today.
Great to have you. And our second guest is Rachel Lunderberg. Rachel leads global process and technology for global agency CWT meetings and events and works closely with Kit and Thrust Carbon on launching and delivering the platform, allowing detailed environmental impact insights to event planners and clients alike. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Thank you. And our final guest is Rachel Munns, Head of Sustainability at Worldwise Foods, that supply responsibly sourced products to major retailer and manufacturing partners, supplying a whopping 30 million plus units globally. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Emma. Pleased to be here.
Great to have you. From major conferences to trade shows, expos and group travel, meetings and events can be pretty wasteful. One study claims that the events industry is responsible for 10% of global emissions. But the industry is also one of the hardest to understand and materially reduce impact. There are so many data strands for one, right? There's travel, hotel stays, meeting space and food and beverage. But at the same time, demand for face-to-face meetings is growing, and rightly so, right? Humans need connection, especially after the pandemic and especially given that workforces are dispersed. CWT is handling double the in-person events now, as I said, as companies want to facilitate greater collaboration. I think, Rachel, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we managed 2.2 million people attending 15,810 events in 2022. And now this year is on track to double that output, organizing more than 30,000 meetings and events, which is pretty impactful on the planet, but it's also potentially an opportunity to change the status quo on how events are planned. So maybe, Kit, we'll start with you. Sustainability is obviously top of the agenda for everyone, but it's also pretty perplexing. So maybe for listeners who don't know, what is, or tell us about Thrust Carbon and also this meetings and events calculator.
Yeah, absolutely. So at Thrust Carbon, we're ultimately on a mission to make travel effortlessly green. We see the wonders of travel around the world. We certainly want an Earth where we can meet colleagues, we can meet family, and you know, often that involves travel. But to get to a world where we can be more sustainable, it has to be easy and straightforward, and we have to break through all the numbers and statistics and so forth. And so that's what we aim to do. So we have a number of sustainability tools and a very proud partnership with CWT. This is the next evolution of that. So Thrust Events is a meetings and events calculator designed for large programs, which is why we work with CWT, exactly as you said, a huge number of events last year and more coming this year, and really helping to make it as simple as possible to really break through those numbers, to crunch the numbers and to get the data in one place, because everything starts with data. Reducing emissions, you have to know what you're going to reduce. And so that's where we start. And once we've got great data, we can start to give really pragmatic advice on how to reduce those. So it's been a lot of fun. We co-built this tool with CWT and another TMC and really solving customer problems as we've done so, which is just a great place to build a product.
Excellent. I mean, you must be seeing, you talk about data, there must be so many, partly, you know, there's so many different strands, but you must be seeing quite a lot of difference and variables, right? It's not quite so straightforward as other categories. And I know that this tool can this manage sustainability output for events of 200 and also 50,000 plus attendees. You know, what kind of differences do you see across the board?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, on average for most events, travel is about 90% of the emissions of the event. But equally, the the variation is still huge. I mean, if you're holding a consumer event like a Comic Con, for example, actually people don't travel as far for that. They're normally attendees attending from the same city, in which case travel emissions are much lower because they tend to take public transport a lot more. Whereas a trade show, a conference, people might be flying all over the world for. So the differences can be huge, and therefore the tools to reduce carbon emissions and obviously plastics and every other area of sustainability end up changing a lot more because if people are traveling locally, that's very sustainable. But if people are flying in, maybe you want to choose a venue that's or a location for a venue that's halfway between where everyone travels in from, for example. So I definitely think that's one big area. And then another area is around food, beverage, and waste. We're seeing a lot more trends of kind of breaking out of the old school ideas of what food and beverage has to look like for an event. The old idea was if you're putting on a fancy event, you have to have a steak course and red meat, if that unfortunately from an emissions perspective is about as high as you can get. So but I think attendees really appreciate more creative menus, locally sourced food. It just makes a better story. It's a lot less simple in a good way. A lot of variation.
Excellent. Yeah, I suppose there's a data, but then there's also kind of how do you creatively manage that and reduce the impact. Again, it's kind of early days. What are the biggest challenges at the moment? That's kind of broad question.
That is. It's a great question though. I think the challenge is the timeline. I think everyone would like the events industry, like most industries, to just be completely net zero tomorrow, to stop having any waste tomorrow, and that would be lovely. The reality is that there has to be a transition time. Trade shows, conferences are incredible places for business to get done. And we can't just stop all of these things from happening because the global economy would slow, supply chains would slow. They're really important events. So it's that time frame of, okay, what can we do today? How can we make our footprint less today? And how do we get somewhere that's much better in 5 years? How about in 10 years? Mm-hmm. And creating that journey. And that's difficult, especially as often you're reliant on suppliers, and then it's a question of what are they going to do? And then they're talking to their suppliers about what they're going to do. So it's tough. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. And Rachel, our clients are also, many of them, at the beginning of their journey. Now, the tool's been live for 2 months. Can you talk us through an example scenario?
Absolutely. As you mentioned earlier, here at CWT, we support a wide array of meetings and events globally, right? We support product launches to industry trade shows, internal meetings. This industry in itself just has an extremely broad audience and a global reach. And it's that reach that really puts us in a unique position to influence and promote a different way of thinking and really support that transition to more of a circular economy, right? One where we produce, use, and recycle versus merely taking and disregarding. This tool has been a really great addition to our tech stack because it makes emissions easy to measure and in a global standardized way. So if we consider an example, so we have an event with 100 attendees. The meeting is operating over 3 days. It's happening in the UK. We, of course, need meeting space. We need food and beverage and things to that degree. And we begin to assess our options. And so our first option, or maybe our first choice, would be, hey, we're going to travel first class. We're going to stay in a 5-star hotel. And we're looking to secure meeting space and equipment for that event as well. And so then if we look to our next option, we realize that we actually could take rail. We have that as an option. We could stay in more of a middle tier hotel. And in reality, we really only need half the meeting space. We could be successful with that. And so we're able to plug in these metrics or these components into the tool to assess and measure the impact of both scenarios. We, of course, see that option number two allows us to reduce our footprint by about 500 tons. So it really allows us to make decisions that are responsible and that reduce those negative impacts that would have been caused with our first choice. And I think that's a really powerful story.
Oh, fantastic. This is great. You know, and also from a tech perspective, exciting times. You know, the collaboration with Thrust is obviously making a meaningful difference. I'm kind of curious from your perspective, as I think we're on the cusp of huge change, right, with AI, et cetera. How can product and tech solve for the biggest issues in sustainability, and will they accelerate going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. You know, I think that product and technology can solve for some of the biggest obstacles or the biggest issues through continued partnership. From, you know, it's through that partnership where event agencies can tap into new and emerging tech. Usually it's more cost effective than building in-house, right? And it enables us to move quicker, to be more responsive. And at the same time, tech startups can gain access to the experience that those agencies have in that industry. They can tap into their customer base, allowing them to scale those products faster and in a way that has market relevance. You know, we heard Kit mention that timeline is a challenge, and I think that partnership helps us remove some of the barriers from that point of view. And now if I think about even just that the AI side of things, right, I think this is going to help us scale faster and break down those obstacles as well. We can leverage it to sort and analyze data. And as more data becomes available, we can easily assess and analyze those behaviors, uncover opportunities, and really create a positive impact. So I think that there's just a tremendous amount of opportunity here.
Great. I'm very glad to hear you. So now that, you know, we're accelerating change and we have all this amazing data at our fingertips, what is next? How do we leverage that data? How do we go beyond reporting carbon emissions? That might be for both you and Kit, or either one of you.
I can jump in first. You know, I think in this space overall, there's just a great opportunity to be more proactive versus reactive. I totally agree with Kit that it all starts with data, right? Data gives us a baseline to measure and monitor. And we all know that it's the things that get measured that gets improved upon. So collecting data is really step one. And then it's really about what's that data telling us? Do you have an opportunity to reduce food waste, to work with your supply chain and identify more sustainable options? Or can you simply use that historical intelligence to really support future decision-making during your sourcing process? I think that data just really unlocks that opportunity.
Excellent. Kit, do you have anything to add?
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree, right? And I think the thing I'd add is making more sustainable decisions, using data to make more sustainable decisions, I think also makes for better events and especially attendee engagement. So, you know, really good examples and easy wins for many events are, what do you do with the waste from an event? You know, food waste, you can tell all your attendees it goes in the trash, or they can see it being put in the trash, or you can donate spare food to food banks. And attendees love to hear that story. You know, they love to hear the story of how essentially them attending an event has helped feed people. And a similar idea is, particularly in the UK, there's a great charity called Event Cycle. They take any kind of spare items from an event, you know, whatever that may be, and then they find charities locally who would like to take them. And again, that's just such a great way of enabling reuse, and it creates a story that attendees can connect to. So it's, yeah, I, and you know, if you're hosting an event that's more accessible for attendees to get to, and therefore lower overall emissions. Well, that's also a win too, because they want to get to an event that's easier to get to, and you're probably going to get more attendees because it's easier to get to. So it's the alignment, I think, is really interesting. And it's not just tick the green box, it's actually make your event better by thinking about sustainability.
There is also a study that says that the F&B waste generated by trade shows alone globally, there's an estimated 30% of the food goes to waste. So something like that makes a massive difference at scale, right? So Rachel, you're all about sustainable sourcing and supply chains, and we know that it plays a critical role. Maybe you could tell us, what is sustainable sourcing and why does it matter?
Great question. I guess to put it simply, sustainable sourcing is the consideration of social and environmental factors when selecting your suppliers. But it's not perhaps as easy said as done. Food supply chains are often long and complicated. So the checklist, shall I say, of the things you need to be asking when you're conducting due diligence of your suppliers is long. So if you were to think about a can of tuna, for example, you might be thinking about what the catch method was for that fish, as well as the labour used in the factory that is going to can that product, as well as then the means in which you're transporting that product from A to B. Kit's already kind of referenced about long supply chains and the emissions associated with that. So there's a really long list of things you're going to be looking at when you start to think about sustainable sourcing from both people and planet perspective.
That's great. I just read a study by GBTA that found that 76% of travel buyers alone that are adding sustainability clauses to their supplier contracts. So what should meetings and events planners and buyers look for from their suppliers, and maybe even including in contracts?
I think that's firstly a really fantastic step. I think, you know, commercial has a huge amount of leverage in those discussions. So to put it there, central into contracts, really demonstrates the importance of that to the final buyer. I think it's important to be asking questions in those early stages of what due diligence they undertake from a both environmental and social perspective. So does the company you're sourcing from have a sustainability manager or a human rights manager? What is their expertise and understanding of the risk? And actually, when we're working with factories or suppliers, when those companies are really transparent with us about the risks, it gives us greater assurance that they are going to be taking the necessary action to prevent those risks kind of coming into practice. I think that when you have suppliers that don't have the information readily available, the data to back up perhaps working hours or full visibility of their own supply chains, that's when I think you can start to feel uncomfortable that they might not have enough evidence that the right practices are in place.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. And you're very often on the ground as well, aren't you? I think I saw recently you were a fishery. You must be seeing quite a lot of positive impact to local food producers and communities when we source sustainably.
Yeah, I'm super fortunate to travel a lot in my job. I spend a lot of time out in Asia. I think perhaps the photo you're referring to is me catching poland line tuna on a fisher vessel in the Maldives, which is not a bad day's work. I mean, it's really interesting to get into the detail of the people and the communities supporting food supply chains. And I think it's very easy for us to sit in the UK or wherever in the world we are, eating our products, eating our dinners, and not necessarily consider the amount of labour that goes into getting that product onto a supermarket shelf or onto a menu at an event. And I think it's really important that we start asking as consumers more questions about those people and those environments to make sure they are being treated fairly.
Thank you. I think that's probably happening too in terms of, you know, employees, especially younger employees, are often asking these questions of the events that they attend and indeed their own employers, right? It's pretty critical. That's my question is, another question is how do we create a groundswell around supplying, sustainable sourcing and supply chains? And I know that, it depends, in various industries and geographies are at different stages of the journey.
I think you're definitely right to recognise that sustainability is at the forefront of people's minds. And I think we all need to kind of jump on that bandwagon and make sure that it becomes the norm in which the way we do business kind of plays out. I think we should not underestimate the impact that we can all have as individuals. So by asking those questions, by making slightly more sustainable choices, maybe not in every meal, but on occasion, thinking about if you're buying locally or if you're buying less meat-based products. And I think that demand, the more we can create a demand for sustainability, the more that then we start to see the impact on the ground.
That's interesting. Although, you know, sometimes I think we have intentions, but they aren't always as we would like them to be. And I think especially given the kind of current climate, there's a survey by Ipsos that found that 30% of the public view aviation, of the UK public view aviation, as having a major impact on global warming. At the same time, searches for cheap flights have increased threefold from last year to this year. So in our current climate, is it kind of falling by the wayside? Is there a push-pull between having, you know, sustainable sourcing at the top of the agenda and also then just cutting costs?
I think it's absolutely right to recognise that sustainability does have a price tag associated with it. And typically products that perhaps are sourced through a fair trade model, lots of people will be familiar with the fair trade logo, means that the product itself is more expensive. And I don't think you can avoid that conversation, particularly during this kind of cost of living crisis that we're facing into. That said, there absolutely is an opportunity to create affordable sustainability. And I think that the more we encourage sustainability to be the norm, the more that that kind of model of sustainability becomes scalable. So I don't think all hope is lost, but it's absolutely right to recognize that for some people, they just can't make at this stage those slightly more premium choices when they're shopping or they're, you know, purchasing goods.
Okay, yeah, thank you. And this is a broad question. Anyone is free to answer. Is that looking beyond everything that we talked about, and everything, in fact, that's kind of measurable, you know, venues, suppliers, sustainable sourcing, are there other aspects to consider to boost sustainability in events? You know, it might be, for example, choosing a particular destination or CSR initiatives. Would love to hear from any of you for some ideas around that.
Sure. It's a funny one, and I guess, I mean, ultimately everything in the events industry comes back to suppliers. It's still on point, but really choosing destinations, for example, that are maybe certified. So the destinations can be certified. It's one of the lesser known forms of sustainable certifications, but for example, the Global Sustainable Tourism Council has a certification scheme for destinations, and you know, that can be a really good way of also choosing, but also sending a signal to the market that actually we want this to be prioritized at every level, and particularly when it comes to destinations, it's sending a signal to governments that they should try and enable their destination to be more sustainable, because they're the ones that would get that certification. The other option, of course, is hybrid events. We're big fans of hybrid events. It has the benefits of people meeting, but also means that, you know, sometimes people just can't come to an event. Life gets in the way, and being hybrid enables them to attend as well. It can be tough to get it right. It's hard, obviously, to get as much of the engagement with a hybrid event, but that challenge is where part of the fun is. The best hybrid events are actually really, really fun. So it almost becomes a different challenge as an organizer, but a one that adds to your event.
Excellent. Yeah, I think we've come a long way from those early days of the pandemic, right? This is all taking off. Things have evolved. Thanks, Kit. Yeah, and also, I think coming back to the corporate sector, private sector, and I think also everyone is always looking out for issues of greenwashing, can traditionally unsustainable industries make more sustainable choices?
I think we can. I think Kit, if I recall, you had a really great example there locally in regards to Energy Week in London.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's As we said earlier, 90% of an event's emissions are going to be travel from the attendees. So a great way of reducing those emissions is to make sure events are combined with events effectively run by competitors. And so London Energy Week is a good example. It is fundamentally a conference for oil and gas execs. Sure, they'd argue it's also renewables, but really it's oil and gas. But you know, ultimately, they're all coming to London for one event rather than 50 separate events. And that's enabling the emissions on a per event basis really to be divided by 50, so to speak. So it's a great example of actually where even an unsustainable industry can really make a great movement towards cutting down.
Thank you. It's great to have all three of you doing such important work in this space. I would like to get to the closing by asking you a question, which is, and I'm going to start with all three of you. Kid, I might ask, I'll start with you since you just spoke. If you had a magic wand, what one thing would you wish for to contribute to a livable, more sustainable future?
Oof, it's difficult going fast. I think honestly it would actually be more government investment in options such as high speed rail. It's a great way for people to still travel but also to cut down on emissions. It has a great longevity. When Japan expanded its high speed rail lines in the 70s and 80s, I think there was a lot of backlash, and you know, time has now told us all that Japan's rail system is one of the wonders of the world, in my opinion. And so my magic wand would be governments kind of leading the way, because in essence, only they can actually create some of the sustainable infrastructure that's needed.
Yeah. I think, and the regulation too, right? As we are seeing, for example, in France recently.
Right, and this comes back to your point with Rachel around fair trade and the green premium. Sometimes the governments just need to say, actually, we're not okay with modern slavery ever being in a supply chain, and therefore everyone has to pay a green premium, because it won't mean there's slavery, which is one thing we should never have, even though a product might be cheaper. So the regulation around this stuff is just so important.
Thank you. And moving on to you, Rachel L. Kit, your name should really be Rachel, I have to say. But Rachel Lundberg, from you, if you had a magic wand, what one thing would you wish for?
You know, I wish that I would say that everyone really taking a moment, taking the time to take the initiative to understand how they can be an advocate and a voice of change. You know, I would just say in closing that it starts with you, right? It starts with each and every one of us.
And Rachel, from you, passing the magic wand.
Yeah, as I've only got one wish, I think I'll go nice and broad and just say that I would hope that the barriers to us advancing the sustainability agenda removed. So Kit speaks about legislation. We've spoken earlier about cost, maybe people's motivation. The removal of all those barriers. So all these fantastic ideas, all these fantastic tools that we have are utilised and enable us to really move forward at pace on this agenda.
As we wait for the ecosystem to improve and evolve, for a critical mass of governments to mandate and regulate, and for more transparent supply chains, hearing from our three sustainability experts, there are things that we can practically do today. And while it's difficult decision-making, not all sustainable choices come with a higher price tag, like going meat-free or travelling by train, and we can't underestimate the power of incremental change. I'm hearing that we can do a few things. We can prioritize measuring in a global standardized way to influence and promote more sustainable choices, boost engagement from your eco-savvy employees and customers, and contribute to building a more circular economy. I'm also hearing that we can interrogate long supply chains, find out what due diligence your suppliers conduct from both the planet and people perspective, and check if they have credentials like a sustainability manager or human rights manager with the data to back up any claims. Thirdly, lean on data.
Use it to compare, benchmark, and shape the future of your meetings and events programs. Thank you, Rachel Lunderberg, Rachel Mons, and Kit Aspen, and thank you, listeners. To find out more about the future of work and travel from experts around the world, tune into Business Travel on the Fly on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.